Yeah,
well, that is the practice, and I mean, I know how much it was supposed to say, but I'm not a pathology, so. Yeah.
Richard Napier, so I'm a plant physiologist, I guess, broadly. I came through East Malling, Wellsbourne, probably overlapped a few with Ralph Noble a little bit, I don't know.
Noble? Yes, I met him here. Oh, Wellsbourne.
Over at Wellsbourne.
I'm Gary Bending. I'm a sort of environmental microbiologist. I tend to work in the root zone, so root soil microbe interactions.
Rob Lillywhite. I tend to work in sort of soil science, agronomy, sustainable agriculture.
Yeah, we already met Patrick Schaefer working on plant carbon, plant symbiosis and microbiomes.
Yeah.
Right. Brent Eagle, I'm a bit of a generalist, but vegetable crop trait genetics would cover it as a general term. So I work with quite a few different people in a wide range of different sort of things.
John Walsh, I'm also a plant pathologist, but we focus mostly on plant viruses.
Yeah.
I'm Rosemary Collier, I'm an entomologist and I work on various aspects of integrated pest management.
Right.
Okay. So, it's a good audience.
Yes.
I've tried to explain to Richard our understanding about GCRF. Explained to him that we don't actually have funding ourselves, we have to apply for funding, and we're all trying to understand how to find good partners, particularly in relation to overseas development type funding. So, in that sort of context, Richard, I think, has something to describe to us about the sort of involvement he's had with soil and composting and some of his experiences in places like Mozambique.
Sure. Very good. Thank you. So I'm from a mixed farming background in Somerset. My father had 103 acres mixed farm. And he didn't use many chemicals. And I know that because he didn't have tram lines down the field. And I wrote an article for the Sustainable Food Trust about this, and they would not print it. I had two journalists present it in different ways. They would not print it. Amazingly enough. Anyway, it was all about history of my father's farm. Mixed farm, he had about 80 cows. And crops, grains, vegetables, and grassland and woods and everything. And it was a very nice farm. So, what I'm trying to try and cover today is the five or six strings that we've got to this system that sort of I've developed from the work of Albert Howard over the last 22 years. It's called the HH4 product, which is this. This is what we make from farm waste, right? Restaurant waste, cooked food, sanitation in Africa, you name it. It all goes into that, and it becomes a very balanced, stabilised carbon to nitrogen 10 to 1 product. Very unusual product, because who's got carbon nitrogen 10 to 1? In green waste compost, it's something completely different, I'm sure, because it is nowhere near a fertiliser. It's just a cheap soil conditioner. And they're making thousands and thousands of tons of this in desperation to get rid of all the county's waste, West Hertfordshire, South Hertfordshire. It's been out of control for 10 years. They don't know what to do with it. But we turn what waste we can get hold of in any country into this stuff, HH4, which is a fertiliser stroke soil conditioner in one. And we call it, and it stops slugs, snails, caterpillars, club root, cabbage, carrot fly, Phytophthora infestans, airborne, potato blight. The list goes on. And there's some very interesting ones I want to try and get in. When are we finishing? 1 o'clock?
Yeah.
I'm going to try and cover a very important one, which is of world-threatening importance, before the end. So these main strings, you covered them, really, some of them, in what the subjects you do, which is very nice to hear, because pathogens, plant pathogens, soil pathogens are extremely interesting to what we do. And we have a material here that cures both of those in one, right, from our experience and from what Howard wrote 100 years ago. He has done all this work And when I phoned up the Soil Association, because I discovered this chap's work in 95, I was taken to Wye College to go and see his reference library. And I went there, picked up one book, couldn't put it down. I've re-released it. I've done all this work. We've got instruction manuals from it and all the rest. And the Soil Association, I rang them up and they said, no, I've never heard of Howard. Sorry, who's that? So at the back of the office, same phone call, they found one lady in one office. She said, oh, I've heard of Howard. You know, so she said like that. And now, since all that time in 95, they've released a whole series of books by Albert Howard, remarkably enough. And Patrick Holden was the director at the time, and I wrote to him many times. I met him many times, conferences, House of Commons, APPG, Oxford Real Farming Conference, like that. He's got my stuff. And Prince Charles, he meets with Prince Charles, who I've got letters from, because, of course, he's a Howard enthusiast, because he was the aristocracy, at, you know, in those times. What's transpired is that nobody is really interested in deep research into something pre-1960. I was telling Colin Tudge, the organiser of the Oxford Real Farming Conference I presented there, he said in one of his talks that no one is interested in anything pre-1960 in modern farming. So to me, from my view, that's their biggest mistake, because it's all been done before. Everything they're trying to do now, the Lincolnshire farmers are up in arms, they're losing 60 tonnes an acre to, what is it? Not the flea beetle, the latest one. It's on the radio all the time, but I've done flea beetle. Our archives on our Sustainable Agriculture London website covers month by month these main topics.
What crop are you talking about?
Well, it's it's some sort of brassica.
Or
stem beetle.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. Well, they're losing so much crop to these things. And blackgrass, and also blackgrass is a disaster. They can't deal with it. It's just overtaking. Why? So, I've only got a few minutes, actually. Half an hour, it's not long. I go on for 2 hours sometimes, like these ad-lib things. So, talking in this vein, blackgrass, what does it prefer? What is it like? It likes acidic soil, right? It likes acidity. So farming's becoming more and more acidic through their treatment of soil and machinery and all this bit. And this is what's encouraging these weeds. Pests also like, also like acidity. Wireworm, right? So what we've got is a product from the farm which changes that. And they measured it in our trial in Kampala, our scale-up trials, with a group called Norgesvel. It's a big Norwegian group. We saw our website when we were in Haiti and we broadcasted what we were doing on the internet, although the films didn't get viral because we used popular soundtracks to back them. That was a mistake. But they saw it and they got me into Africa, three countries, three times, to do surveys. And Mozambique's their most prominent country at the moment, and they work East Africa. And this can spread right across these places because they're rural farmers, they're subsistence farmers, they're trying to sell their produce. And they've all got these problems. But the ingredients for these problems in East Africa is abundant. It's everywhere. In fact, they burn it. Every year you can fly across Mozambique and think the whole country is on fire. So I asked, why are they burning all? And they said, for two reasons. To stop snakes and for fun. Okay. Neither of those are necessary, in my view, at all. So they're burning their fertilizer. Okay, for a start. And every town I visited, they're sweeping up all the streets, which are mud streets very often, sweeping them up. All the waste from the house just gets chucked out. It's in Uganda on the side of the road. It's for miles, just dripping into the gutters that flow along the road. All that is fertilizer, but nobody seems to know, because it's from the common understanding of composting, it's not easy to make it into an effective fertilizer that stops all the things I've mentioned. This is not an ordinary compost. This is by far, four times better than John Innes number one, right? Which doesn't claim anything we claim on our label. Doesn't claim to stop slug snails, caterpillars, like that. So there's no comparison. It's oranges and apples. So with this material, we can stop those things, Now, let me try and cover some of the other strings that we've got. It also deals with the sociological side of it, which is the waste management, right? This is a massive problem in Africa, right? It's a massive problem in Ealing. They've got more rats breeding in Ealing than anywhere else in London. It's a website about the rats in Ealing. But in Africa, on the world scale, there's 70 billion more rats every year or something. It's just incredible. I don't know who figured that out. But they're spreading disease, right? Now, the World Health Organization, I've met all these people in Haiti. We spent 3 months in Haiti at the earthquake. And the World Food Program. More diseases spread by rats and flies, like the worst spreaders of the vectors of disease. So this system stops that. Right? The biggest controversy in the Sustainable Sanitation Alliance in Africa was helmets. Right? Now, this stops that, you see, but you've got to prove it, you know, on a scientific level. We've got to get scientific proof with peer-reviewed papers of how effective this system is on many levels. So this is what we're looking at today. So we've got the plant pathogens, we've got soil pathogens, increase in crop yield, 300% 100 years ago with chemicals that just started. Howard was proving 300% increase in cotton. Bananas, he would double the size of the bunch of any variety and double the size of each banana. Incredible science, incredible stuff. And so that was an increase, everything was increased. And the people who ate this food that Howard's book describes, living in China, Korea and Japan, because Howard got this work from another guy called King. His book isn't here, it's out of print, it's all out of print. And he surveyed China, Korea and Japan, early part of the last century, and found that they were living in the densest populations of 3,000 people per square mile, not just farming it, getting all their food, they were living on that land. So that's the highest density of population, and no disease was found. So that brings us to this point where I've met this gentleman, Graham Sake, does it on a agricultural scale in Australia, where he's remineralising soil because it's about minerals. The main cause of disease, as far as I can see from a layman's point of view and all the people I've met, is about disease from lack of minerals in the food. So the immune system is low, there's no minerals in the soil, and that's why the plants can't be healthy, and Howard covered minerals, vitamins and proteins. If those three things are right, you've got healthy soil, right? If you've got healthy soil, the plants are healthy and they do not get attacked by pests and disease. My last slide at the agricultural show when Stoneleigh closed was at Coventry University to 50 Nigerian ministers that had been flown in. Right, the conference was called Nigeria to Go Organic. It was arranged by a large group. And Coventry University facilitated this, and they understood that if you can do this on a large scale, you've solved all these problems. You've solved so many problems, right? So it's about soil management rather than new varieties. New varieties are obviously there, but Howard always said it's about not only new varieties, it's about soil conditions as well. So we have to change that in order to revitalise all the soils of the world, which have been farmed for thousands of years. We haven't had an ice age for eons of time, which brings minerals down from glaciers, from rocks, and like the alluvium soil of the Gangetic Plain is fertilised by the soil, the river, leaving its deposits. So that is one reason why that area is so fertile. But we haven't had an ice age with mineralisation from rock for so long, so that there is depleted soil everywhere. That's the thing. And I'm mining it up from Scotland and Wales. I bring it in because it's got 72 listed minerals in it. I know places in Africa where they haven't even tapped the stuff because they don't even know what it is. And it's got 72 listed minerals, right?
What has? Sorry, I'm not... Volcanic
rock dust.
Rock dust?
Yes. So this is inside here. Right. We blend this stuff. It's got charcoal. You've heard of biochar, right? Well, biochar contrary to the professor, who's the head of soil science at Cranfield, who came to a meeting I called with Rothamsted, Cranfield, and Norgesvell, who flew in from Norway to this meeting at Cranfield, trying to get this kind of funding organised for nutrient uptake in England and pathogen control in Mozambique. This all be going on for 6 months. We had this meeting. Anyway, the whole outcome of that was that if you can show... Oh, I've lost my thread here. Hey, what was I talking about particularly?
Mineral dust.
Yes, the minerals, rock dust. If you use this stuff, right, you're putting the minerals back in the food and the plants become healthier. It aids plant development. And we've got a little bit in here. But what we're doing is showing that, for instance, I haven't seen a doctor for 22 years. Right? Okay, now that's not a scientific thing, I know. But I've been eating this food and I can't go anywhere without growing it, because you can taste the difference, you can feel the difference instantly if you eat this kind of food. So this is what Graham Sait's on about, and this is what Africa's desperate for. In Uganda, all the schools we surveyed have got mineral deficiency, they've got malnutrition, and the main reason is because they cannot produce leafy green veg because they can't afford the chemicals with which to control them. Right, this was our last survey in Uganda. And we have a system where we can produce this leafy green food. They don't even get it to eat. What they get, they don't even buy it anywhere. For the fee-paying schools can't afford it. They just get rice, maize, you know, sort of porridge with some beans, if they're lucky. In a fee-paying school. And
forever
so
lost again. You've got Scottish volcanic rock in there.
Yeah.
You're taking that to Mozambique.
No, there's places in Africa where it hasn't even been tapped. Right? Anyway, without that, Howard didn't use that. Howard didn't use rock dust. I bought in several different things into this science of the Howard Higgins agricultural system. So that, without it, brings minerals from all the biomass that you harvest around your farm and all the waste, because each plant that grows brings up different minerals. I have a whole book on plant minerals. So they go back into the food system. So you're remineralising the soil just by that recycling, right? Now, all that can be scaled and proven and analysed, but that's another string. So the health, the pathogens, the sanitation problem in Africa is absolutely massive, because most of it goes into waterborne systems, and according to the World Health Organization, that leaches into water tables, which causes more death on the planet than anything else. Any other single thing. So this is a dry system. This is totally dry. You have these biodigesters up and down the country, cost millions of pounds, and they're shipping all this gear out to biodigesters. I was at a conference in London on that. And between them, you could have this system localised on farms without the transport, doing it aerobically, producing a fertiliser, which they don't do. They don't do a fertiliser out of all that money and expense that stops these basic problems. So we have a product here that is exceptional, and we've just discovered it stops black spot in roses. So we've got appointments at garden centres up and down the country because no one's got a cure for black spot in roses, for example. So that's the latest one we've discovered. It goes on and on and on. This one came from the Coventry group, Grow Organic. I was up there a few weeks ago. And this has cost 10 quid, right? This, we sell it at £5, right? This is 5 kilos. And the lady said, well, yeah, but you just spread a bit of this and you get seaweed stuff and you just spread a few granules as fertiliser. But that you have to put on an inch thick, right? But what we've discovered is that you don't have to put it on, you don't have to repot a plant, you just put it around the top. 1 inch around the top, and you completely change the plant. Completely change it from disease to health. A plant that you dig up and throw away. I've done it with bay trees, roses now. So it's a completely commercial, viable proposition. Hugely. Because none of these companies have a solution to these problems. The RHS, I went down there, their head gardener and assistant came out and spoke to me. I had a flip chart thing of pictures. Got halfway through it, she said, right, we'll order 1 tonne of this and 2 systems to make it. HH2 is the system that manufactures it. No moving parts. I got back and the director said, yeah, later, OK, we need to put it to the committee. And then the curator wrote to me eventually, we're quite happy with what we do, thank you very much. Someone suggested probably because they've got contracts with chemical companies because they buy so many chemicals for their 3,500 gardens across the UK that it's political, you see. But there's dissension in the RHS because they want a solution that doesn't involve chemicals and having to swap chemicals and pay all this money doesn't work. Chemicals just deplete more soil life, right? It's a proven fact, sulphate of ammonia kills earthworms. I mentioned this at a conference at the Society for Chemical Industry. It was an organic conference, and it was called The Effect of Organic Farming. And when I said that as a question, the head of the Elm Farm Research Centre leant across the rostrum and said, well, I'm well aware of where I'm speaking. And the whole room went quiet, 150 delegates. And I was saying to the people near me, so we're in the Society of Chemical Industry, we can't speak the truth. It's a scandal. The conference was about organic farming. And sulphur of ammonia kills earthworms. It's not the width of the wheel of the tractor. So I went to Mozambique. I did my trial there, and we were down at the university, and we walked across, we got over to the university farm, and the chap said, it was a whole group of us, right, where's your chap? He said, you've got a chap here with his soil testing kit. I said, yes. They said, well, where is he? I said, it's him. With a spade. So I said, dig a spit over there, dig a spit over there, dig a spit over there. Dug them up. No worms. That's why you've got the stem borer. Big beetle like this, eating right through the maize crop. It's big, this beetle. All this can be cured by soil. This was Howard's life and work. Absolutely phenomenal. Everyone thinks they know how to make compost. They don't know how to make this. So we've got packages.
So how do you make it?
Well, we've got packages that universities are ordering, different packages. We give all the training, all the equipment, everything involved is there. We train the workers or the staff, and they do it, and that's how you can get it installed. We did a test at the Waltham Pet Centre for Animal Nutrition. It's in Melton Mowbray, and it's run by Mars Group, and they actually study nutrition, Mars. And they tested it on dogs' waste. That is, they breed dogs there for the whole life and they just die there for nutritional research. And their chaps put it through. We trained them up. Their garden management people put through 100 dog waste a day. These units are only 1 cubic metre. 1 cubic metre. 100 dog waste a day in paper bags. Right? It didn't have the bioplastic then. But that's what you use. They're thinking of making it law. It's been on the radio recently. And 700 in a week, and then they did it. And then at the end of 30 days, their scientists came and analysed it 4 times, pathogen-free, toxicara-free. They had never seen anything like it. We need scientific verification. This is a revolutionary system. Columbia University are studying various aspects of sanitation. And one of the main problems in Africa, for instance, is when girls have a period, they don't even go to school because they just, the boys get the bins and tip it all out. And that's a fact. That's in the Susanne conference I was at in Kigali. So I got to speak there and I was on the list and I was telling them with this system, you don't even have to have that. It goes in the toilet because the flush is this stuff. It's a dry flush. We even had Coventry University trying to make a rotary valve to get it into a toilet with a lever. So all this can be done, but right now we add it manually with a scoop. So it goes in flat and it's just gone. Nobody knows. How many hours of school hours would be saved just with that technology? Phenomenal thing. That's the Susanne A conference, and there's 3,000 members in Sustainable Sanitation Alliance. None of them knew about this system. 100 years old.
So you still haven't told us what the system is. I'm lost again, I'm afraid.
Right. It's a waste management.
How do you get that into solution?
It's a waste management system, right? So all the ingredients are on farm, villages, towns, schools. You take it all and you process it in a certain way right? For one system, it takes 35 square metres. And it comes out of there like that in 90 days. Sell it in shops.
So it's wet waste?
Yeah.
Waste organic matter?
Yeah.
And then you've got a composting system.
Yeah.
Is that what your system is?
Yeah. But what?
And you add volcanic ash or something to it?
Well, we just, as an extra added thing, yeah. Add some charcoal. Because that is a longevity in the soil. But that's all since Howard's time. Howard didn't really do that. So, we've increased...
So is it compost or special compost?
Well, it's special compost. But why it's special, as I was saying to our friend over here, is because these units facilitate the right specific growth of fungi and then bacteria within a particular heat curve, which is guaranteed through the addition of carbon and nitrogen, right? The thermophilic reaction automatically occurs.
So you've got to add separate carbon and nitrogen.
Oh, you add it in the right way from your farm, right? Carbon, nitrogen, main ingredients. All the other things are incidental, which you want to get rid of, which are all scaled and voluminous, but they're scaled and go in so that it works, doesn't become anaerobic at any stage. So there's no methane given off whatsoever. And because you do this, because the fungi kicks in at 43 degrees to 52, and then bacteria is up to 65, right? When you've got that cycle, with each week, it's a weekly system, each weekly cycle, you've completely completed the necessary inoculation, if you like, of that material for its whole life, which is 90 days, and it comes out in 14 days. Over 14 days, you've completed the necessary work on that material to produce that kind of fertilizer in 14 days. And then it matures. It just matures on the ground and it gets binned at the end. The last month, it goes anaerobic and it can go in. We keep it in wheelie bins. And each wheelie bin is 200 kilos, so we know we've got four tons at any one time, selling at £1,000 a ton. And then we're selling it on the street in Islington. They buy it from us and sell it at £10 because people will buy it. This is 10 quid. Right?
How would a village in Africa actually...
Well, obviously it's got to be scaled to economics of India and Africa. I've been to India 7 times teaching this to the UN and people. It can be scaled according to any country. It just, we're going to make the units in Africa and India. They're made of fiberglass, by the way, insulated fiberglass, because rats cannot eat fiberglass. Right? They can eat through concrete. They can't eat through fiberglass. It's got to be insulated. The first PhD in Uganda on this subject came to our farm at Kampala, and the whole family bought the book, and they said, this is amazing. The toilet, which you've replaced our wet system, because they had an area of about 50 square metres, with a big wire fence as a runoff for a twin toilet system. And, you know, you fill up one pit and then another one, you fill up the other one like that, and it runs off into a little pond and then it runs off into some herringbone drains. But our undergraduate scientist got malaria the first 3 days he was there because of this pit of water, this pond. So I immediately drained the pond, capped off the toilets, put our dry system HH3 on top. You only need one, you don't need two on that scale. And the guys could not believe Professor Niwagaba, he was there with his family, no smell. Simply by this system. No vent pipes, no fans, no solar. Let me get on to the other aspects. No entomology is needed in the growing system. We've proved this many times. In fact, the Soil Association had a competition. Please send in a 2-minute video to prove your case. And we've got 40 problems here in the Duchy of Cornwall farms. And here's the application. So I rang them up and I said, yes, well, I've looked at this. But we can solve 11 other of these problems besides the main one I'm choosing. He said, I don't know about that. He just said, just apply. You can only apply for one. So I chose the one that was a common problem, huge problem in England. Slugs and snails in salad crops. So we put it down, we made the video, it's on the website, and we didn't win. We rang up and we said, oh, who won? And the guys told me, they said, oh, a guy won who said, we can plant, we've got all our brassicas, and we plant another border around the whole field of brassicas with a bug that eats those bugs. Entomology. Right? Wonderful. I said, yeah, but we can solve 11 other problems at the same time. And they said, well, we don't know about that. So it didn't get anywhere. It's just out of the radar of the Soil Association. In fact, I met the head of horticulture, Ben Raskin, who said to me at a seed conference in London, he said, because I took him down my 22-inch courgettes, right, which store for 5 months with no refrigeration. And I had the head of Rothamsted come up to my farm and cut them open. It's all on the web, the picture. John Crawford, no seeds. It's a courgette. Ben Raskin said, what you've done by taking your own seeds and with this kind of fertility, you've bred your own variety. So this is food security. This is going to be very interesting to Save the Children, who I have been accepted by to do a project, many projects. They know the real key to feeding Africa with nutrition is their own food. It's not WFP planes, as we're flying into Haiti, one after the other, big grey planes with a blue tail fin, WFP. I met their head woman in their campus at the log base camp in Haiti, and she said, yes, the best food solution is no World Food Programme. It's grow their own food. They admit that on their website. You can see that. So this is the real key to feed the world. Right? Not just Africa, but the whole world is running out of soil. Cambridgeshire's got 20 harvests left, 30 harvests. This is on the radio. Mainstream farming is saying that. How desperately serious is that? We just went past some oilseed rape. You've got nice yellow fields. In Hertfordshire, a whole field has failed. There's a few yellow flowers along the hedge. What's going on? Desperate. I'm filming this. I get up on the ladder on my van, and I'm photographing these fields, which you can't see from the road. There's no interactive website on Farmers Weekly. Nobody knows what's going on. It's an absolute disaster. But it's all about fertility of the soil. So, any other points that I've mentioned to you in our pre-meeting?
Sorry, could you just explain what you would see as a possible experimental design in a place like Mozambique?
Yeah.
If there was a network of farms having compost facilities.
Yes, they have.
How could trials be set up?
Yeah, they have networks of farms. Norgesville already do this. And they just want to improve what they do. So they don't have any worms, so we can introduce worms, right? Our field is full of worms, and it's up to 16 million per acre, according to Howard and Darwin, who analysed these things in great detail. So we need to set up trials where you might pick some other farms that aren't on the trial and have these farms that are on the trial and measure all these things. It needs to be done because it's an obvious physical fact that these things improve the microbiology of the soil, the macrobiology increases at a huge scale, and the main thing about why this system works is fungi and bacteria in the soil, because why you don't plant. How much money is that going to save the world if you stop ploughing? More soil, more carbon is lost by ploughing in agriculture than any other industry put together. Apparently, all the factories and planes and cars would emit less carbon than ploughing all the fields of the world. That's from the Oxford Real Farming Conference. So, we don't plough, but you can't not plough very successfully unless you use this stuff. If you put shop compost and don't plough, you're nothing. Nothing. A, they heat treat it before they sell it, and that kills millions of organisms. For whatever reason. So you can use it in a house, probably. But you don't need to, and we don't recommend it for indoor use. But we've got measured analysis from various groups, and the Dr. Elaine Ingham, if you might have heard of her, did an inauguration speech at the ORFC saying, how everything can be analysed by the microscope, right? Dr. Elaine Ingham, you know, she's the world's greatest compost fertility maker, yeah? but well, she does it by microscope, and you can add this and you can add that to any soil and have fertility forever if you do that. Right? 70% of Africa are rural farmers, 70% of India are rural farmers, and 70% of both of them don't know what a microscope is, I'm sure. Right? So how are they going to do that? This system has been analysed by her laboratories. She only selects laboratories. This is Laverstoke Park. Right? They offered me a free analysis from my talk at the Soil Association Year of the Soil. And it's right across the scale. Right? Nematodes. That's the thing. I think that's the main thing that is stopping slugs. Because it's so prolific. Every field I've done it on, I've trialled over 20 years, a lot of different sites. No slugs, no snails, no caterpillars on your brassicas. No one seems to have done this. I can't see that anyone's ever done this. I haven't met anyone who has. So, why is this possible? Because the nutrients are so rich, the proteins are so rich, the vitamins are right, and the minerals are right, that the plant, as I said in my last slide of commentary, will not be eaten. The slugs and pests and disease will not be attracted, will only be attracted to the inefficient. So that was Howard's sign, that if there's a pest and disease, and he did it on field scale, whole field, string down the middle, half the field grown with chemicals, ploughing, his side done this way, similar, and the bugs come in India, they come, and they strip the field right down the string. They did it at the Royal Show with 2 square metre plots, same thing in 1947, I've got the book with it in, no one could understand. And they still can't understand how it is you can stop something with soil conditions. It's absolutely phenomenal. And anyone can make this. You see, you don't need to be a scientist. You just need to have a manager, you know, one manager per site to make sure the operational system goes right, because it's about timing, temperature and moisture. That's the three most important things. You get that right and you solve your, you know, your whole fertility problem. Any other main points? So we'd scale up. All these things need to be trialled and scaled up. The scale up is another thing. That can easily be done from a cubic metre system. You've been making open compost for thousands of years, right? But when you enclose it with the right controlled moisture, because it's self-convecting, right? And then it self-condenses with a flat roof. So you're maintaining the moisture and through the temperature gradient. You get the right fungi. And you open the box in 12 days, and it's riddled, covered in mycelium, come up sporophores, all over the top. Absolutely phenomenal. You don't see that in an open compost tube. And they can't make open compost in Mozambique. It just dries out. They throw hundreds of gallons of water. It's just hopeless.
Now, are there any trials in Mozambique, an actual unit set up to show?
No, that's what they want to do now. They've agreed, the partners have agreed to get us down there with Norg as well. And they want it in 3 locations in Mozambique. 3 locations, that's great. So at the same time as all that's going on, you know, this university could work the nutrient uptake trials. That's one thing we definitely want to do, right? The quality of the food and the pathogen control through the system of obnoxious waste. So because how, once that's how, proven...
How ready is Norrisville proceed with a network of farms in Mozambique?
Well, they have. They have a network of farms connected with the university doing their existing work.
And how long has that been running?
I'm not sure. But it's a very well-established site because I've been there. And we can find out these things. I phoned them 2 days ago, and they said the partners have agreed to do it. It's just taking time. It all takes so long. But what happened to Rothamsted was the director came to my farm when he was head of sustainable systems, John Crawford, looked at the crops and the 19-inch parsnips grown on soil that has never been ploughed for 45 years. We know the history. We know the field because I was head gardener at the High Canons. This field was sold off on the same estate. Phenomenal. So that's why he said, yes, we can get Newton Fund to get you into Africa and do a nutrient uptake trial in England, pathogen control in Mozambique. Norgesvel agreed, but then they heard, the last thing I heard from John Crawford was that Newton Fund doesn't fund Southern Africa at this present time. So a year went by, lost. Nothing happened. I phoned Eric and he says, oh, we're on the cusp of finding investment for such projects.
Well, the funding conditions might be different than what you applied for.
Yeah.
The other, the list of countries, I think, does include Mozambique, doesn't it? But we're looking at GCRF.
But so, certainly they work Tanzania, Mozambique, Kenya, and Uganda. That's the main countries they operate in, and we've got all the contacts everywhere for that.
But so it sounds like there are existing field sites, things actually running in sites.
Yeah, Nampula University has this trial site. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. We need to close up here. But if anybody would like to speak to Richard later on, he's more than happy to be in contact if you want to follow this up. I'm quite happy to try to interpret things that he's saying if you would like to have some more discussion about the biology behind it. The gap really is understanding the funding that we're trying to apply for and the sorts of things that Richard is attempting to do in Africa and here as well. So I'm happy to be a conduit for a conversation, interpretation, extension of ideas, developing whatever might have been stimulated by Richard's visit today.
Good.
Yeah.
So that's our operator's manual for the system that Howard wrote his book about 100 years ago, 35 pages. And it's just on land that's never been ploughed for 35 years. So we know. I've never tried it on a chemically exhausted field, I must say, because farmers don't let those bits go. They only let bits go that are odd paddocks that are too small to incorporate. So that is a question of how long it would take to regenerate in a chemically exhausted field. Something I don't know.
Well, thank you much for listening.
Thank you. Oh, our website, by the way, Sustainable Agriculture London. You can just put it in Google. Come on.
Ericsson is our own.
Yeah, I came from web links already.
You have?
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good.
Oh, yes.
I haven't looked into some of this, so Chris seems to.
The online thinking is right.
At least the press.
Yeah.